We turn our attention now to interesting research that was conducted by a team in the Department of Animal Studies at Stellenbosch. Dr. Sarah Erasmus joins us now. She's a postdoctoral researcher, and we're speaking to her about our love of meat in South Africa. South Africans love their meat, and so much so that without it, we feel that a meal is not complete at all. And it's not just chicken or lamb, beef or pork. There are other meat delicacies that we consume regularly. So we're looking at this culture, this love of meat in South Africa and how it developed over the years. Good afternoon, Sarah. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good day. Thank you. Thanks for having me and chatting to me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on board. So you published the findings of your research in Animal Frontiers, and you've gone back into time historically to look at the attitudes of different groups in South Africa, our love of meat by mm-hmm. different groups, and of course, it is something that we seemingly share.
Yes, that's exactly what we did. We for this journal, we had to write an article on what is meat in South Africa, mm-hmm. and to do that, you have to go back in time because all the different groups and cultures played such a role in the development of our South African meat cuisine. And then also with that, we also looked at meat consumption of the different groups and how that plays a role in our definition of what meat is.
So what definition, let's start there then. How do we define it? It might sound like a silly question, right? We're like,
Scientifically, you have a definition of what meat is and what it includes and excludes. But then I think for South Africa, we are meat scientists, so we thought that, yes, that's important, but you also need to consider how it's perceived and the perception. So, and especially it's not the flesh. It's an intact animal. So some cultural groups, they, utilize the offal, so they have traditional dishes that incorporate other, say like the organs, the, mm-hmm. and the intestines and everything. Like I give this example, you would better than me, but mala mugudu,
tribe mala mugudu,
South African or the Black African tribe dish. And what we also bring forth in the article is the similarity between the different groups. So that dish, we also have like the Afrikaners, they make a similar offal dish where they add curry to it, and we call kerry offal. So with the article, we try to also bring forth how that certain dish, it might belong to a certain cultural group, mm-hmm. but then also the influences came from other groups or other influences.
Yes, I have a particular, I think everybody that I work with knows this, a particular soft spot for the Khoisan. And it's interesting that you were also able to trace and see their contribution to this meat culture that we have in South Africa.
Yes, you sum it up so brilliantly. The soft spot we have is because they were some of our first inhabitants in South Africa, and what we saw with our research is that they would cut up the meat and they would air dry it or even roast it over a fire, mm-hmm. which is so reminiscent of our biltong or droewors and also our braai culture we have.
So that's where we can trace it back to how the Khoi and the Sun enjoyed their meat. They were doing biltong and dry wars back then already.
Yes, but maybe
they were
enjoying it, but it might have not been that exotic as we have today. I mean, I must say, back in the days, they didn't have the spices we have today mm-hmm. and also the methods of preparation. But it's very similar to what we actually still do.
So this, just explain how they used to do the dry wars.
What we read up is that they, like when their animals were shot, were killed, and they would, eviscerate the animal, they'd bleed out, and then with the slaughtering process, mm-hmm. the meat would, either if it's not eaten immediately, their pieces will be cut off and hang to air dry. Mm-hmm. That was the basic way it was done. Yes, so we found.
Yeah, so it might not have been just for the sheer enjoyment, but for the preservation of the meat, for it to last longer, so more mm-hmm. out of need.
Yes, and also, yeah, because they didn't over-consume, they just hunted to have enough for their daily needs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also another example was with the black African tribes, that when an animal might have died of a natural cause, they would also cut up the meat and leave it to air dry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which is also quite similar.
Yes. And then the Cape Malay, over the years, we've had this evolution of very distinct flavor complements and a menu that we associate mm-hmm. with Cape Malay cuisine. And many of the dishes have become part of what we identify as South African dishes, or they describe, or they help to give us a sense of what South African cuisine is. So what has been the contribution of Cape Malay?
I think with the Cape Malay, and it's that Indonesian flair they brought forth with the inclusion of the spicy curries and the creation of the typical South African meat dishes such as your bredi, your pickled fish, and babuati.
Mm-hmm.
And also the curry type dishes. It was not just the Indians, but the Cape Malayan people also developed that type of the bredis and that's so typical of what large proportion of South Africans consume daily.
Mm. Right. And all of these have become quite mainstream. And the colonizers as well, when the Dutch arrived, there was also a contribution that was made over the years. How would you describe it or map it over the years?
Yeah, the Dutch, it's more that Cape Dutch cooking style that they brought with that is characterized with also use of spices, the cinnamon, nutmeg, allspice, and chili peppers. And that was also developed through the style of the slaves who used to cook for the settlers. And they incorporated those spices into the food, and also just to spice it up, for one, to flavor and to give it an aroma. But also what we found that with some of the animals that was purchased from the Khoikhoi, the cattle were very tough. So breeds were developed to soften the meat because mm-hmm. the cooking process is longer, but then also the incorporation of spices to disguise slightly tainted meat. That we thought was also quite interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely, because that's what even gave rise to the spice trade over the years when it disrupted the silk trade. It was all to preserve meat even as it's going off, to disguise potentially the meat that's going off pre-fridge era.
Yes.
Sarah, let's take a break. We'll come back with more with Dr. Sarah Erasmus, postdoctoral researcher in the Department of Animal Studies at Stellenbosch. And they've been looking at our common love of meat. So we're going to take a closer look, as they believe that there's certain historical milestones that have led to this development of a strong meat culture in South Africa. So we'll take your calls and your questions on 011-883-0702, 31702 for your SMSs. And with Dr. Sarah Erasmus, who is one of the contributors to this research that was published in Animal Frontiers, a study looking at our love of meat in South Africa, this meat culture that has evolved over the decades. Sarah, thank you for staying with us. But what is the importance, the symbolism? Because different groupings will have different relationships with different animals, and even how what we do with the animals will be informed by that.
Yes, there's definitely certain groups, for instance, have a preference for certain types of meat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually what we will say is the meat consumption as well, because depending on the price, which is, we found, a very crucial factor,
mm-hmm.
certain groups are determining, it's related to their income, will consume higher amounts of, say, for instance, pork and chicken, because it's cheaper than your beef and your mutton.
So always price conscious and related. Were you able to look at historical mm-hmm. events that have influenced this particular evolution over the years?
No, we didn't specifically look at, say, for characteristic historical events, but more throughout the years, that just the development and typical dishes that sort of we found today, and how say that was developed. But we didn't really zoom in on specific like you say, events that took place that might have had a drastic influence on the meat consumption.
Right. Or because looking at the contribution of the Cape Malay, who brought the Indonesian flair to what we now call South African cuisine, that happened at a particular time during a particular era, the question. But how, because over the years, often when you speak to foodies, you hear about how we struggle to define what South African cuisine is. And some feel that it's a non-starter because we're so diverse. People, because often there's this tendency to want a specific dish to be the dish that tells you what South African cuisine is all about. Is that a tough question? Was there something that emerged out of your research, a particular dish?
Sure, yeah, we had that same problem. We had to have this diversity, and you can't really just say one dish, because then if you have one dish that's maybe very specific for a certain ethnic group or cultural group, then you sort of, you're trying to make that group better than the others, and that's not the case in South Africa. I think it's, for us, it was taking into account all the dishes and using that as a unity to signify South Africa as a unit, but also a diverse unit. So, no, there's not, I think I'm a bit cautious to just, to point out one certain dish that I think represents South African meat cuisine.
Right, but one thing that is for sure is that we love meat.
Yeah, that's for sure. And whatever form it might be, if it's the flesh or if it's made offal or the walkie-talkies, your chicken feet, or if I know, like in the Afrikaners used to like the sheep testicles. They would also consume, or Brian, do we call that turkeys? That's a, such an Afrikaans word. But you see, so the meat it's so diverse. Different groups.
Yes, and you also say that this is transforming daily. These trends are transforming daily because we see trends come and go, diets come and go. The availability of meat is one thing that we touched on, the price of meat, even the population, urbanization, immigration in the country as we move around. All of these are changing and impacting this evolution daily.
It's true. So, for instance, if we have a typical dish and the ingredients of that dish is just becoming more expensive, I mean, we're going to consume it less, and hopefully it's not going to die out, but it's definitely going to something that's going to also be influenced by trends.
Oh, yeah.
So we hope that our South African meat does not change as much, but then some studies have also indicated that in a certain trend is that we are moving more to a Western orientated diet, where we have a lot of instant meals, and so it's becoming more simple because people spend less time in the kitchen and they try to get away with more quick solutions.
Yeah, I certainly see that happening. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Sarah.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking to you today.
That's Dr. Sarah Erasmus, postdoctoral researcher in the Department of Animal Studies at Stellenbosch. So you can take a look at what they published in Animal Frontiers. They look over the years as to how this meat culture has evolved. I can just see the Braai Day people saying, you see, you see, you see why we have Braai Day as part of the national heritage. I just hate that. I've always made my position clear on Braai Day. It should be another day. Leave Heritage Day alone. Give it its place in the sun. And we do. We love to braai. Perhaps that's something that we have in common, our love of meat. But let's leave Heritage Day on its own. And if braaiing just so happens to be part of your heritage celebrations, then why not?